Hello and welcome to Bizarre Conspiracies. My name is Eric Patino.
And my name's Conrad Toll.
Today we have a fascinating topic for you. It's going to be about the Vril Society. Not a lot is known about the Vril Society, and it's actually not even that well known in Germany where this secret society is from. The only reason that we have so much information about this, is because I got a hold of this book. And this book came out in 1995. The author is Jan Van Helsing. The name of the book is called Secret Societies and Their Power in the 20th Century. I'm probably gonna stumble a lot on these German names, so forgive me. I will try my very best.
You just gotta say the W's like a V, and a few other letters are totally different.
But let's go ahead and get started. So he claims that in 1919, a man by the name of Karl Haushofer, a German general, professor, and politician, founded an order. And this order is, in English, it translates to Brothers of the Light. Now, later on, that was renamed to the Vril Society. Now, before we continue, I need to tell you briefly about a few other societies. One called the Thule Society, and another one that is DHVSS, for Lords of the Black Stone, but also has another title called Black Sun. Now, Jan Van Helsing mentions them quite a lot without explaining who or what this group really is, so I had to do a little bit of extra research on this. Now, the Thule Society is a German occultist group founded in Munich shortly after World War I. The Thule Society was originally a German study group headed by a man called Walter Neuhaus, a wounded World War I veteran turned art student from Berlin. Now, the primary focus of the Thule Society was a claim concerning the origins of the Aryan race. In 1917, people who wanted to join the Germanic Order, out of which the Thule Society developed a year later in 1918, had to sign a special blood declaration of faith concerning their lineage. And this is what they had to do. The signer hereby swears to the best of his or her knowledge and belief that no Jewish or colored blood flows within their veins.
And this is the Thule organization?
The Thule Society. Okay. And that is spelled T-H-U-L-E. Thule Society.
About what year is this? Does it have an indication of what year this is all coming together?
1918. It started in 1917, but then it got to where it really is in their power and was named officially the Thule Society in 1918. Now, that is the Thule Society. Now we're going to switch over to the DHVSS, or the Black Sun. Now, they're a secret society that was allegedly created to prepare the Aryan race to meet the aliens who supposedly lived in the Hollow Earth's interior. Crazy, right?
Yeah. Now, when they say aliens, do they mean aliens from outer space that are living inside of the planet? Or do they mean alien as in they're alien to us, but they're natives to the center of the Earth?
Both, actually. Okay. So they believe that there are aliens from another planet that arrived there, but they also mention that there are humans that live there that are native to the Hollow Earth. Uh-huh. Now, we will be talking about these three main groups from here on out. The Thule Society, the Black Sun, and the Vril Society. Okay? Now that we know a little bit about each of them, because he just didn't mention the Thule Society or the Black Sun, but we're going to be talking a lot about the Vril Society. Okay, so, a small group of individuals from the Thule, the Vril, and Black Sun were gathered in a lodge in somewhere in Germany in December of 1919. This is well after all three societies were firmly established. Now, when they met at this lodge, they were met with two mediums simply known as Maria and Sigrun. These mediums were there because they were the ones who were telepathically communicating with these aliens. Now, Maria had received a message including instructions for building a fine craft in a secret Templar writing, a language that she was not familiar with. These telepathic transmissions, according to the Vril records, originated in the solar system Alderaanian, which is 68 light years away in the constellation Taurus. Jan Van Helsing, the author of this book, actually included a short summary of what these messages the Vril medium had received, but I'm not going to read any of them because they talk a lot about how intermixing races shouldn't be happening and it's all quite disturbing, so I don't really want to go into that. But in those messages, they also received information to build technology based on implosion. To put it simply, implosion instead of explosion. Following the energy paths of the monochord and the implosion technology, one reaches the realm of antimatter, and thus the cancellation of gravity. Now, the first saucer-shaped flying machine using an implosion-based propulsion system, later known as the Other Side Flying Machine, was constructed in the summer of 1922. It had a disc 8 meters in diameter, a second disc above it that was 6.5 meters in diameter, a third disc below it that was 7 meters in diameter. The central body was cone-shaped, and at the bottom, a stabilizing pendulum that reached the cellar was hung. Now, the top and bottom disc rotated in position to one another in an activated condition to create an electromagnetic rotating field. This first flying disc performance is unknown. However, it was used for tests for 2 years before it was disassembled and most likely stored in a factory in Augsburg. The Other Side Flying Machine, as it's come to be dubbed, should, in theory, create a very powerful field around itself that extends considerably into its surroundings, making the entire contained area, including the machine, an entirely separate microism. At its strongest, this field would be free from all external universal forces, including gravitation, electromagnetism, radiation, and a matter of any kind. And as a result, it could move freely within any field, including gravitational fields, without the acceleration forces being felt or even being affected. Now, in June of 1934, the first purported German UFO was revealed. The first experimental round airplane, the RFZ-1, was created on the grounds of this craft that was constructed in the factory under the direction of Dr. W.O. Swanson. Skusen? It climbed vertically to a height of around 60 meters during its first and only flight, after which it wobbled and danced around for several minutes. The guidance mechanism for the 196 was completely ineffective, but just before it was destroyed, the pilot managed to bring it down to the ground, leaping out and fleeing. Now, the RF-1 came to an end at that point, but the Vril flying machine began. Now, the Vril flying machine, this is what I was telling you about in the last podcast, the Nazi Bell. I don't know if you remember me telling you about the Nazi Bell. So it's a craft shaped like a bell. Now, this is a thing that can...
Oh, no. Yeah, I remember that. I remember looking it up. Right. Never mind.
This was all precursor to that. Now, the RFZ-2 was equipped with a Vril motor and a magnetic field impulse steering unit, and it was completed before 1934. Now, that was 5 meters in diameter and had the following flying qualities or characteristics. As the speed increased, the visible counters blurred, and the craft began to display the normal UFO colors of red, orange, yellow, green, white, blue, or purple, depending on the drive setting. Now, this thing worked, and in 1941, during the Battle of Britain, it would have had a strange fate when it was deployed as a transatlantic reconnaissance plane because the German conventional fighters, the ME-109, lacked the range for these trips. It was captured on camera at the beginning of 1941 when it traveled to the German cruiser Atlantis in Antarctic waters while flying across the southern Atlantic.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yet, all that was useless as a weapon, and this is what they really wanted. It only changed in directions at 90 degrees, 45 degrees, or 22.6 degrees. All of that was only possible with the impulse steering mechanism. Now, the Vril Bell acquired its own test location in Brandenburg as a result of the success of the small RFZ-2, RFZ-1, as a remote reconnaissance craft.
And this is the one that looks like the flying saucer.
This is the one that looks like the Bell, but probably not the one that we're familiar with just yet.
Okay.
The lightly armored Vril 1 Jaeger was airborne by the end of 1942. Now, it was 11.5 meters broad, featuring a levitator drive and a magnetic field impulse steering unit. And this craft could hold at least one passenger. Now, it could travel at the speeds between 2,000...
One passenger or one passenger. Person? Okay, one, so that's just one person who's not flying.
Well, I think it's just one person, period.
Oh.
One driver, one passenger, that's all this craft could fit. Now, it could travel at the speeds between 2,900 and 12,000 kilometers an hour.
That's half the speed of sound, then.
Now, it could turn right at full speeds without the pilot losing control, could fly in any weather, and it had a 100% capacity for space travel. There were, and I quote, 17 of these Vril 1 Jaegers produced, some of which featured glass domes, and certain models actually could house two people, so a passenger and the driver. Now, the V-7 was another project that was worked on during this period. Many discs with standard jet engines were constructed using this code. Now, this was the RFZ-7, and it utilized both a jet and levitating disc propulsion. They constructed a vertical takeoff sphere craft with jet power in July of 1941, but it had several flaws. Now, they later created a tachyon drive equipped with a electrogravimetric flying gyro? Does that sound remotely right?
I have no idea what any of that would be, so it sounds like you're saying real words.
Anyways, electrogravimetric flying gyro. I think I'm saying that right. That was more successful, okay? This tachyon drive to one was more successful. Now, former CIA agent and Green Beret Virgil Armstrong writes about German aircrafts that could take off vertically and fly at right angles during World War II. This machine was deadly because it was paired with some kind of a laser gun, probably the KSK Power Ray gun that was rumored around this time. They were impossible to shoot down or shake off, and frequently they actually forced squadrons to turn around and go back where they had came from. Now, apparently this was all recorded down by this CIA and former Green Beret person Virgil Armstrong. Though when I looked up him and tried to use some of these terminologies, I couldn't find anything, so take that with a grain of salt. You can look up this book if you want. Again, this book by Jan Van Helsing, and it's called Secret Societies and Their Power in the 20th Century, and it came out in 1995. I have a little bit more to discuss here. So, in the coastal town of Kohlberg, by Christmas of 1943, the Vril Society held a significant gathering. Again, the two mediums were present, this Maria and Zigrun. They were present at this meeting once again. And this time, it was for the project Alderinian. The Alderian Project was the primary topic of the agenda. One of the mediums started making travel arrangements after learning exact information on the Alderinian system's livable planets. Now, this concept was discussed at a meeting between Hitler, Himmler, and Kunkel of the Vril Society. And the same doctor earlier that I couldn't pronounce, a Dr. Skaman, whatever. But this was held in January 22, 1944. Now, the Vril 7 large capacity vessel was to be sent to the Alderinian through a dimensional channel that was not affected by the speed of light. Photographs of these crafts were found in the secret SS files when the British and Americans were occupying Germany at the beginning of 1945. And according to a decision made by President Truman in March of 1946, he authorized the collection of data from Nazi high-tech experiments. All of this that we are talking about right now. Now, the German scientists who had conducted covert research were discreetly brought to the United States as part of Operation Paperclip. Now, we all have heard about Operation Paperclip.
Right, right.
And we know that, yes, military officials did bring in German scientists over to work on what is now NASA. They worked on these things. We know that, at least. But this was all what led up to Project or Operation Paperclip. Now, again, take all this with a grain of salt, because the author of this book doesn't really mention how he got all of this crazy information. This was a lot of detailed information about flights and diameters and meters of the ships and what they could do, and these two psychic mediums that the Germans had who were talking to these aliens that gave them the information. I don't know how he got all of this information. So this is the topic that I presented to you. Now, what do you think of all this, Conrad?
I'm confused why it is that if they had this spaceship-like thingy that couldn't be shot down, why didn't they just mass produce those instead of the MiG-109?
I don't know.
Yeah. I kind of think it's crazy far-fetched stuff. There's a whole lot of the Nazi UFO theories, and this is definitely one of them. But what they always seem to be missing in my case is, why, if the Nazis had all of this stuff, did they not finish it or use it? Now, one of the things that I've heard is the idea is that the U.S. has them, and all the UFOs that we see are the UFOs that the U.S. has been taking blueprints from the Nazis and then manufacturing them and then perfecting them and then creating new ones. And they've got their own secret line of UFO manufacturing on Area 51.
Yes. So,
that kind of makes sense, because it's, oh yeah, they had them, but they never finished them. Or that sort of thing. But this one, it claims that they had them and they're flying around. There was that crazy one that I ran across, the story of like the Nazis in Antarctica, where Antarctica is actually underneath the ice wall on the flat Earth. And then on the other side of that, there's the continent of the Greys, I think it is. The reptilians or something. And the reptilians have flying saucers, and they're Nazis hiding with the reptilians on the other side of the flat Earth or something.
That's weird.
But that one, it's equally weird, because if there's reptilians that have flat saucers and that sort of thing, that working with the Nazis, why are they working with the Nazis? I mean, if they're going to be working with somebody, why not work with the people who didn't lose World War II?
Well, again, I would say that's probably because the Nazis had those two mediums that were directly communicating with them telepathically. You know, maybe the U.S. didn't want to do all that. Who knows? Maybe in a couple of years, some equally crazy story will come out saying the U.S. also had its own
UFO project with
UFO
Nazis
secret society with its own mediums.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe. But I thought this was a very interesting book. And I do recommend people who are into this sort of stuff, if you're a history buff and if you're really into UFOs, this is right up your alley. Go look up this book, read it. It's really crazy. I only read a small part Well, I didn't directly read because I took notes on it and I didn't want to plagiarize. But yeah, I only took notes from this book in a very small section of this book. This book is huge and it talks about so much more other than these crazy German flying saucers. So if you're interested, go check it out. But that is all I have for you on this episode. Final conclusions, Conrad?
They say that truth is stranger than fiction. And this one right here, if it is fiction, I think that maybe it might beat some of the weirdest stuff I've seen in reality.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is real, man, that would definitely prove the point that because I'm pretty sure that if that is not fiction, I don't think you could make anything crazier than that.
Even if this is 10% true, it's still really bonkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's all we have for you today. Thank you so much for listening to Bizarre Conspiracies. If you want to send me an email, you can do so at bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. That's all one word, bizarreconspiracies@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we will catch you in the next episode.